Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Cameron Henry, the president of the Louisiana State Senate. Cameron reached out to me the other day and wanted the opportunity to discuss any number of issues that were brought up during this fiscal legislative session. A lot of uncertainty about a lot of things, some misinformation out there, and we are really excited about the fact that he made the call. I think it exhibits his belief in transparency and talking about these issues. He simply asked, what are people talking about? What are the top of mind issues? What's their reaction to the legislative session? And he wanted this opportunity, and we're glad that he called. And Cameron, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Noel. How's everything going?
Doing well. Cameron, if you would, for the benefit of listening audience, let's start off with the differences between a fiscal session and other types of sessions, so they kind of know what the ground rules are for this session. It makes things a little bit more difficult to have a bunch of different bills introduced.
Well, a fiscal session is really the only session where you can raise taxes. That's the main thing. You can lower taxes anytime you like. Anything dealing with tax, passing a new credit, a new exemption, or just raising a tax, you're able to do in a fiscal. That's a fiscal session. When we're in a non-fiscal session, those things are off the table. So in Louisiana right now, it's structured. Your first and your third year in office are non-fiscal sessions, and in your second and in your fourth year in office, they are fiscal sessions, which means if you're going to raise taxes, you're going to do it either in your second year or your fourth year in office.
Yeah, which is, the fourth year in office is the election year in office, which it doesn't happen very often in that year, does it?
It does not happen very often, and you can credit former state representative Steve Scalise for that. He changed that because he knew that in election year, no one was going to raise taxes. So it only gives you 1 year and a 4 year term to raise taxes.
So your thoughts as to the state of the state of this session, in other words, do you feel like you guys were able to accomplish a lot of what you set out to accomplish?
Well, we were able to address as much as we could as it relates to tort reform. We passed some significant bills on that. That had, I wouldn't say they had bipartisan support, but they were passed with the understanding that if we'd get them on the governor's desk, he would sign them. And we needed to make some significant progress towards that. We had made some progress the year before dealing with homeowners insurance. This year, we needed to address auto insurance. We passed 8 or 10 bills dealing with it. When that will have an effect on lowering people's auto insurance, you can't really pin down an insurance company on that. But you have to make the changes. You have to take those steps. So we did it. Hopefully we can rest for a year, see if they've actually lowered rates during a re-election year, which would be year four. If rates are going in the right direction, we can continue moving with different bills. If they're not going in the right direction, meaning insurance still isn't going down, well, then we have to start all over again and find a new strategy to get this to work. So it's not a very pleasant subject matter. Someone like me who didn't go to law school, it becomes very difficult. But we worked through it. I think we've passed some positive legislation. Both sides would have liked if we would have done more or less. But I think we hit a good balance for what we sent to the governor, which hopefully he'll sign within the next week or so.
Cameron, we had Tim Temple on earlier in the show, the insurance commissioner. He still believes that there are enough unresolved issues to warrant a special session. There are a number of people that are opposed to that. I kind of asked the question this way. What do we fear by going into a special session?
On special session on insurance?
Insurance reform. Yeah, on insurance.
Well, when we just did a session where we passed one bill, a bill on each subject matter that we could, and that that was a pretty significant feat. It's actually kind of disappointing that the insurance commissioner still isn't content with what we did. But that's his purview. He's in charge of the insurance industry.
Well, he didn't say it that way, in all fairness to him. What he said was is that there's still a lot of questions unresolved out there, a lot of misinformation floating around. He believes that the best way to get everything on the table from all sides of this issue is to go into a special session whereby you have a landscape to have a very robust debate, conversation, however you want to refer to it, about all of these issues. And kind of makes sense. And, you know, so I asked him, I said, what I don't understand is, what do we fear by doing that? I mean, you know, people are, there's still a lot of angst and anxiety out there, don't you? You know,
of course.
And I'm sure you hear it every day.
Oh, I hear it and I pay for it, right? I mean, we both pay auto insurance. I hear it and I pay for it. I don't know what, I don't know what, from a perspective of robust conversations, we had those for the past legislative session. We just went through a significant session on that subject matter alone that took up an enormous amount of session as a whole. So I don't know what more we could discuss at this juncture. I mean, you can always continue to try to tweak it. What we would like to do is assume the bills that we pass become law. Let's do that first. Once they become law, let's see what effect they have on the insurance industry if they actually lower insurance rates. And then if they do, we'll continue moving in that direction. If they don't, we have to find something else. But throughout this whole process, you have to appreciate insurance companies are still making an enormous amount of money being in Louisiana. So they're not struggling on the financial side of it. Obviously, we take risks here because of hurricanes and where we live, and we can appreciate that. But there's another side of this where there's only so much of a policyholder's authority they want to cede to an insurance company on the chances that they lower rates. And that's what comes out when you have these robust conversations. Is everybody? No one likes trial lawyers until you need one, right? I say that, and I said this a while back, that hurricanes really helped the name of trial lawyers. Before, everyone thought they were ambulance chasers and they were terrible. Once hurricanes started walloping Louisiana, everybody became ones with them because that's where you had to use them to go after your insurance company. And that's kind of where this has evolved from. And it used to be where auto insurance was the biggest problem. Then it kind of mirrored up with homeowners. And we addressed homeowners, and we're still waiting for that to go down. Seems the only thing that's truly going to have an effect on that is the fortified roof program, which seems to be working to lower rates. Now we want to see what we did on auto, whether that's going to have an effect.
There was an issue that during the course of the conversation with him earlier that came up, and I don't recall how we got on this topic. There was a bill that was introduced to reduce the premium tax from 3% to 2%. That's something that we control, and I don't really know the history as to why we would tax ourselves on paying a premium, but we control that and we can create savings for people right now. What would be the reluctance to eliminating the premium tax?
I don't know whether that bill ever even got to the Senate, to be honest with you.
It never got a hearing, period. I don't think.
It never got a hearing in the House. That was a House bill, I believe, correct?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
In general, I mean, we control that. We can create a savings for people right now, 3% reduction in cost. What would be the opposition to that?
If I'm trying to think why someone would oppose that, if they believe that the insurance company is going to pay less, and then that they're going to pass that savings on to the policy.
It's a pass-through. The insured pays 3% tax on the amount of their premium to the state of Louisiana. We control that. Why not eliminate it?
You caught me flat-footed on that one. If it would have gotten to my side, I could have a better understanding of it. I don't know if I knew if I knew the author or the instrument. I'm gonna see if I can find it in one of the breaks and see if I can figure out why it didn't move.
Just in theory, I just don't understand why we would tax ourselves on the premiums that we're paying. You know, so if I have $1,000 premium, you know, I'm paying 3% of that in a tax to the state of Louisiana. If we're trying to get more competitive, those things that we actually control, taxing ourselves, it would seem to me that we might want to consider eliminating that sooner rather than later. I mean, we talk a lot about, and I'm all in favor of all of this, you know, reducing state income tax and things of that nature, business taxes. I kind of look at it, my residence, and I'm sure you do as well. Your residence is your business, right? One of your businesses, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, you have to manage it appropriately. But if they said to you, well, you know, we're going to eliminate the 3% on the premiums that you're paying to your insurance company, I don't know about you, but I would be all in. Yeah. Give me that savings.
Correct. I mean,
anything at this point, you know, as it relates to insurance.
So I believe what you're talking about is a bill by Galley, House Bill 224. And maybe at the next break, you could pull up the legislative website, legis.la.gov, and you can look at the fiscal note on it. And when you come back, we can discuss it and how it relates to the Department of Insurance. And what the impact would have to the state. It looks like it would be a reduction to the state general fund, $75 million year 26 and 27, and then $60 million moving forward. If I got the right bill, for the next 5 years, it'd be a total of $255 million. It's a reduced premium tax rate on vehicle policies. So it looks like it would have a significant impact, and I believe that would fall mainly that reduction would mainly come from the Department of Insurance, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah, I don't know. The insurance commissioner mm-hmm. said that he was in favor of that bill, and I just was kind of curious as to why we would tax it. If we control it and we can reduce the cost to the constituents, it would seem to me that we would do so. Let me.
When you read the fiscal note, I don't know whether assuming I have the right bill. I don't know whether that's exactly how it was perceived in this piece of legislation. Let's put it that way.
All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870. We're visiting with the president of Louisiana State Senate, Cameron Henry. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Cameron Henry, president of the Louisiana State Senate. Cameron, I'm going to go through a number of these texts of over the last several days since we announced that you were coming on, of folks sending in questions to be asked. Folks had asked a lot about the LA Gator program. I know the governor was wanting to almost double the funding of that, or maybe double the funding of that. The Senate did not embrace that notion and I think passed a bill to keep the funding at current levels.
Correct.
And the That is correct.
Well, when they originally came for this program, we were eliminating the voucher program, and then we were going to start a new program, this Gator program. Now, the same groups that loved the voucher program came to us and said, the voucher program isn't working. We're going to eliminate it, and we want to start Gator. And at the time they wanted, with the governor's connection, was $93 million. When the original came out, I said, look, we're going to start off where we left off, where the voucher kids are taken care of. And then we'll see how the program can grow. Once we see the demand, the need, let's test it first. Because the same group that said vouchers were going to work, clearly they didn't. Same group's coming to saying the Gator's going to work. So the biggest issue we had, if you look throughout the country, is how fast these programs grow. Texas capped theirs out at $1 billion, with a B. Members were comfortable taking a child that was in a public school system and moving to a non-public school, taking the dollars associated with that student, which is considered the MFP, which is the money the state pays, and just having that money follow the student. this program quickly grew into taking kids that are currently in a private school, and the state would just pay for it. So they took applications of about 36,000 students. 10,000 were in public school. The other 26,000 were in non-public school. That the state was just going to write a check for them to stay in the school that they're in now. Now, whether you're for school choice or not for school choice, this isn't a debate. It becomes a debate of what is financially responsible to do for the state. We had a responsibility to take care of the voucher students, and that's what we did. It's very difficult for me to go back home to Jefferson Parish and say we're gonna, which has a significant number of people who send their children to non-public schools, to say I need your tax dollars are going to continue to go to send a kid to public school. Your personal money is going to be used to send your children to a non-public school. But then we also want you on top of that to send someone else's kid to a non-public school. That's very difficult and extremely expensive from a state perspective. And once you give something to someone on the state side, it is very difficult to take it away. So we're going to manage that program very, very conservatively to where we don't wind up just turning it into another TOPS where it starts off at a small number and grows exponentially at the detriment to other programs in the state. We're going to be very cautious with that program moving forward.
You brought up TOPS. There were a number of bills that were introduced relative to TOPS, and I think there were some increases, possibility of high performing students getting increased TOPS. What was the thinking there?
We continue to lose our best and brightest because surrounding schools and surrounding states can give them more money to attend. And we wanted to say, if you get above a 31, 32 on the ACT, we're going to give you more money than you previously had. The legislature is tired of hearing about the Alabamas, the Ole Misses, now the Arkansas, taking our best and brightest because they're providing better scholarships. This was a way to give students who do a little bit better on those standardized tests a little bit money and incentivize them to stay in Louisiana.
When we look at, because this was fiscal only, I know you and I have talked about this before when you've been on the show, and I guess y'all are still in a posture of waiting to see what actually is going to pass in Congress. There's been a number bantered about that the one beautiful bill might impact Louisiana in a negative way to as much as $2 billion.
$4 billion.
I'm sorry. You're right. $4 billion. Excuse me. Has there been any further conversation on that? And where do we find ourselves at the present time?
Oh, yes. I talked to Senator Cassidy yesterday, and he and I were working very well on this, as well as all of our hospitals have been up to visit, not only with Cassidy, but with the Speaker and Scalise and our delegation, Senator Kennedy, to get them to appreciate where Louisiana fits with those dollars, right? Currently, we receive about half of our budget. Federal funds, our total state budget for Louisiana is $46.7 billion. Half of that is federal funds, which is $23 billion. Of those $23 billion, $15 billion are attributed to the Louisiana Department of Health. Those are funding all of our hospitals' special needs across the board. So we've had those conversations with Senator Cassidy on the adjustments they want to make, whether it's a provider tax or mirroring of services, of what effect that would have on Louisiana, not only the Ochsners and East Jeffersons and Children's, but also all of our rural hospitals, what that would affect. And more importantly for them to understand not only the services that will be affected, but a lot of cases, those are the largest employers in those areas, and that will be affected as well. Sometimes, and I can appreciate the position they're in, you're just focused on numbers. They're trying to back into a number so we can pass some tax bills for the president. You forget that by eliminating the dollar amount that would go to provider service doesn't eliminate the need for the service. It just means the federal government isn't going to pay for it anymore, and the state has to pay for it. We can't no longer provide the service. So it took several calls But that's how the system is set up. And I appreciate Senator Cassidy for taking all my calls and really working with me as well as the rest of the hospital association and rural guys to compromise and continue to work to get those numbers in a place where they're still going to reduce the cost to the federal government, which we understand is going to be the end result, but in a way that isn't detrimental to Louisiana and obviously to our local hospitals and still provide the services that we need. So that's still a work in progress. But from last week to this week, we have made great strides.
Cameron, when you think about a $46 billion budget and half of it coming from federal dollars, does that keep you up at night? I mean, that you don't have control over half of your budget. Somebody else decides what you're going to get.
Correct. That is why when someone asked me about special sessions dealing with redistricting or the pharmacy issue, I said, no, if we're coming back, we're coming back on this issue, because should we reduce any of that dollar amount in the short period of time, we would be back for a session to fix it. I'm trying to be optimistic that that won't happen, and I'm much better placed today than I was 2 days ago. But you are correct. $23 billion of that is controlled by someone else. I mean, when you think of the state general fund portion of our budget, right? You have state general fund, you have self-generated fees, and you have statutorily dedicated funds. What I mean by that is, you know, self-generated fees, that money's going somewhere. It's going to come into the state where it passed through. A statutory dedication is something that in years we have taken a portion of a sales tax, a piece of something, and dedicated to go to a specific service, right? That equates to about $10 billion. So the state general fund portion that the legislature actually gets to have any kind of control over out of the 46 is about $12 billion. Now, still a significant amount of money, an enormous amount of money, but when your listeners are going, y'all have a $46.7 billion budget, why can't we fund X? Why can't we fund Y? Why are we making reductions here? Because the legislature only really gets to truly manage $12.3 billion of that, which this year's budget is reduced, right? Our state general fund, we spent less, so 1.52% less than we did last year. So we're trying to be fiscally responsible by spending a lot of reoccurring money on one-time expenses to get our roads and bridges and so forth back up and running. But that is true on the federal side. That is, if you want to talk about keep me up at night for the past 2 weeks, I haven't talked to Senator Cassidy so many times. I've talked to him more in the past 2 weeks than I probably talked to him in the past 2 years.
Fundamentally, though, and I don't know the answer to this question. I know that we're one of the states that has the largest percentage of federal funding in our state budget. Are we the one who has the largest amount of federal funding of our state budget? I think we're in the top five.
We are definitely in the top five, because when you look at our congressional members and their districts that are dependent on Medicaid, most of our congressional members are in the top 10. So that would put our state pretty high up there on that list as well. So yes, we are heavily dependent on the federal government for these type of resources.
How do we end up dealing with this, understanding that the federal government's looking at a $36 trillion amount of debt? Obviously, there's a desire to cut back, it looks like, over the next 10 years. I mean, if we're going to have to save Social Security and other social safety net programs that the states are going to have to figure out or remodify or re-engineer their budget structure, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things I've asked of all the members of Congress is whatever changes you make, if you can give us a longer runway, maybe 3 years to adjust our budgets, to adjust our spending, to accommodate for it, to where we just don't one day have to cut services. Everyone can trim, and we're going to have to do that. From the federal side, our budget increased. About federal funds grew, it looks like, 7% from the previous year, 7% growth in federal funds. So we need to take the steps necessary to accommodate what they're going to do in Washington. We just need to do it over a longer period of time. 3 to 5 years is something realistic. When they score bills in Washington, it's over a 10-year period. So us them adjusting that date to 3 to 5 years is something we can realistically scale back on without being detrimental to any of the services or the hospitals. So it's a delicate balance, but I think we're going to get there because everyone appreciates the fact that we do need to reduce our spending. It's how you do it and the time frame that they give it is going to be the most important.
Do we have a plan? I mean, I know, you know, because of the amendment failures that there are limited areas where you as legislators can cut, right? There's a lot of dedicated
yes.
revenue streams out there. In light of that, is there a plan? And the reason I ask that, I mean, you know, to formulate one kind of at the last minute is a very risky process. You know, one that, you know, is not open to much debate and research and things of that nature as to what the downstream implications of some of these cuts. Have we been working on a reduced state government plan?
Well, the easiest way to reduce state that plan is to not grow government year to year. And every year our state general fund, this is years of negative growth. Last year, I think it was like a 0.1% growth maybe. So we're controlling our growth, not anticipation specifically of D.C., but just anticipation of taxpayers want their money to be spent wisely. What we have done, additionally, is we have a revenue stabilization fund, which is not necessarily a savings account, but close to it. We have about $2.3 billion in that. Our budget stabilization has $1.2 billion in that. So as relates to if D.C. were to come down real fast with something, do we have the ability to kind of patch something in the short term, knowing that we're going to have to reduce it? We could do some emergency things based on an executive order by the governor to adjust something quickly. But moving forward, we're just going to continue, and the governor's on board with this, and he said he was going to do a standstill budget. We're just continuing to really limit the growth of reoccurring revenue in the state budget. To this year, it's a negative. I don't remember in my time yet that we've been able to get to negative. Last year was one of the lowest growths that we've had, and this year the negative growth is a tribute to members really diving in on the budget and the transparency of both sides as we work through the budget.
Earlier, did you say that our federal, the federal dollars that we received actually went up by 6 to 7%?
Federal funding increased, correct, by 7.18% from last year.
So even though we were in a negative this year, you know, net of net, you're basically talking about we are relying on the federal government for an additional 5.5-6% of our funding.
That flows mainly through, like I said, that's mainly through LDH from the state general, right. State revenue side, state general fund, taxpayer side. Now it's all taxpayer
money. So it's
money,
not a dollar. It's not a dollar for dollar thing, is what you're saying, because of some of the financing schemes that are utilized relative to Medicaid in the way that we account for those dollars.
Correct. That is correct. What I can control the growth of, and what the governor and the legislature can control the growth of, is state general fund dollars being spent on reoccurring expenses. That means next year you're going to have to pay for it. That's what we're trying to control on our end. What the federal government's doing right now is trying to get that, is trying to control the growth on the federal side, which we can appreciate, which needs to be done, but just needs to be done in a very calculated way.
Yeah. All right, we got to get to another break. We're visiting with the president of the Louisiana State Senate, Cameron Henry. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
We're visiting with Cameron Henry, president of the Louisiana State Senate, and I wanted to point out again that he reached out to me the other day and said that he wanted to spend an hour talking about a number of bills that were presented before the legislature and the Senate, and he's the president of the Senate, and we appreciate him reaching out to us. Cameron, if you would, at the end of the legislative session, there was this bill about pharmacy benefit managers. You guys ended up killing it, I think, with good reason, because there wasn't much of a debate on it. I mean, it is a toxic issue right now across this country with people trying to figure out where the money's actually going as it relates to their pharmacy benefits. What are your thoughts about this? And the governor is calling for a special session in August. Is that going to happen?
I actually have a meeting with him later on today to go over a bunch of things, and I'm sure that will come up. I don't know whether a special session on this really has any need right now. What we decided to do instead, the bill that was up wasn't going to become law until 2027, which means we'd have the 2026 legislative session to review it again as well. That's what really caused the most pause from members. Well, we're going to study exactly what delinking means as it relates to the pharmacy industry, which vertical integration means when it comes to the pharmacy industry, and see how that would affect the people of Louisiana. That's one thing that we never got across. Usually in a bill like this, you debate it for at least a day or two on both sides. You would have public testimony. You would have a little bit more input from your constituents. We didn't have any of that. It was kind of dropped in at the last minute. And at the end, members got very uncomfortable. Obviously, CVS has a big role in the state, about 140 stores. They were going to be affected. CVS also has a contract with the state to provide a lot of services and pharmacy benefits for all the state employees. So when you put all that together, the fact the bill wasn't going to take effect until 2027, they said, look, let's study it, see what the effects would be. We'll come back into session next year, 2026. And if there's something that needs to be done, we will have more information to do it. I mean, when you're talking about adjusting where someone can get their drugs from, their medicine from, you don't want to say you did that without having an ounce of public testimony. That's not good for anybody. Yeah.
We would be an outlier, right? Our state would be an outlier on this issue.
Well, Arkansas did it, and of course, the lawsuit automatically ensued. So if we did it, logically, the next step would be another lawsuit would ensue. So instead of paying a bunch of lawyers to sue each other over something that we just held up and said, okay, let's wait till next year. By then, we'll know the effects of the Arkansas lawsuit, number one. And number two, we'll also have the chance to figure out what effect it would have on people of Louisiana. Odds are, if you're a CVS, you get your drugs from CVS, maybe your costs are going to go up a little bit. But maybe if you get it from a local pharmacist or a Walgreens or a Walmart that don't have these PBMs, maybe your costs are going to go down. So these are just basic common sense questions that need to be answered before we can adjust where people get their pharmaceuticals, their drugs from. That's not something we wanted to go back home to do. Across the board, every senator was on board with it, because at the end of the day, studying it for a year is you're going to get a better result when we pass the bill in 26.
Yeah, I agree. For what it's worth, I think we were acting very hastily. This is a very complex issue, and it's one.
Yes,
it's kind of difficult to get your hands around. With the limited time we have left, two other issues. One, I want to thank you for your role relative to the University of New Orleans rejoining the LSU system. Obviously, that allows some dollars to pass to UNO to deal with some of the financial challenges that they have been experiencing. And thank you for saying it seems as though that bill was able to make it through without much opposition at all, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, we need UNO is about $20 million, at least $20 million in debt to vendors. So we needed to get that cleaned up. And we, UNO is a staple in New Orleans. We need to make sure it survives. But it's got to come back under a different leadership, mothership type leadership. Also, we're working to see whether we're going to keep it UNO or we're going to do LSU New Orleans. We're going back and forth that. But the main thing they need is students. At their peak, there were around 17,000 students. Right now, they maybe have about 5,000 students. And their faculty needs to adjust, and the administration needs to adjust down their size to accommodate the number of students they have now. And that's a very difficult thing to do. I think under LSU's tutelage, they'll be able to do that, and we'll be able to get that school back on its feet.
Yeah. Last question, folks are wondering, what do you think is the single the best accomplishment that you as the president of the Senate and the Senate as a whole took on this year and were able to pass?
Well, I'm always going to be partial to making sure your government growth stays low, and a negative one for us is good. The stuff we did on the bills we passed, the tort reform, hopefully will move the needle. We passed an interesting bill by Representative Carver, Kim Carver, and the Lori Schlegel helped with the instrumentalness dealing with age verifications for apps, to where we can have parents can have greater monitoring of the apps that their children are downloading. Obviously, that's been a problem in the past, and some bills were brought this year to pass that liability on to one side or the other. I'm proud of the way the House and the Senate came together, and we decided we're either going to protect children or we're going to protect companies. And across the board, we decided to protect children. And that's what we did. Both sides of the groups involved weren't happy with it because they wanted to pass that liability on to each other. We pushed all the groups aside and said we're going to protect children, and that's what we did. So that was a bill that is not much talked about, but should have a great impact on the kids of Louisiana.
Absolutely, no doubt, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us, Cameron. We know you're busy. President of the Louisiana State Senate, Cameron Henry, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Noel. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Increase in nudism. Where's that, Scoot?
Well, I don't know from personal experience recently, okay?
Damn.
You know, I tell you, I never go in the water nude at a nude beach because I see the things that fish strike at. And, you know, if there's something just wiggling around in the water, you know, I'm kind of scared. So, yeah, we'll talk about that. Hey, it's Free for All Friday. We'll talk about LSU and a bunch of other stuff.
All righty. Scoot's headed your way. Have a great weekend, folks. We'll see you Monday.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.